Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast episode.
Hi, everyone.
Wow.
Where did that enthusiasm come from? Are you high?
I just wanted to interrupt.
Yeah, she's good at that. It's not even your episode, Aki, and you're fucking interrupting me. Jesus.
Doesn't matter. Every episode I'm on is my matter. Episode.
It doesn't matter what episode I'm on. Tim's here, Pronell's here, Chris is here, and yes, Aki is here. How's everyone doing?
I'm all right.
I'm great.
I am looking at 3DS games now, so I am not sure how I feel just yet. We're down to the final month, and for some reason now I suddenly care.
I need to look through myself, but I haven't yet because I'm waiting on a paycheck.
The thing that's killing me, though, is I forgot there's like the DLC stuff, which... You wouldn't think it'd be a big deal, but certain games is good, certain DLC in the games is good. But unlike, say, a modern system, you have to get the DLC from inside the actual game. And sometimes you can't get the DLC inside the game until you reach a certain point in the game. So,
look. It is a big DLC.
Yes. So, like, it was brought up on Twitter today, where a friend of mine was telling somebody that they needed to download the Fantasy Life game and its DLC. And I was like, yes, you do need to do that because that game is stellar. And then I started to think, what do I need to download? Shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even. I'm not
nothing because you're never going to play them.
You don't know what I'm going to do. I like games just as much as everyone else. But yeah, I play my stuff. I bounce around a lot. I may never finish them all. I'll give you that. But
all right, I'll take it.
I started playing Etrian Odyssey just in time for them to announce the HD remake, so now I'm at an impasse.
No, just if you already bought them, just keep playing them. They're not adding anything to the games.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep playing it. Although right now I am not playing it. I am playing Lufia 2,
a game I never finished, but I really should try to because I did like what I played of it. It's a good.
Yeah, I've played it many times. It's a you know it's the fact that it is so beloved and yet clearly had like next to no QA on it is a testament to its overall value. However, what I'm playing is a fan-made fix. It's a patch that fixes all the problems with it. It's called Fru Lufia, just based on a famous typo from the Game Boy Color game where Sinistral Goddess says, "Now that is what I call Fru Destruction."
Okay. No, Pernell, I was trying to think of the name of this game earlier. It's called Pinball Pulse, The Ancients Beckon.
I've never heard of that. It's on 3DS?
Yeah, it's a simple... It's a one-table pinball game, but it's made by the developers that made Metroid Pinball.
Nice. Prime Pinball. That's a good pinball.
Yeah, so it's just a good... It's cheap. It's a good little pinball game. You will never see it on anything else ever. So
yeah.
I'm looking it up right now. Once the little bag man stops smiling at me, of course. But yeah, I'm gonna check that out right now. Double bonus if it's friggin' cheap.
Yeah.
Cause this is the month where I get a little bit of cash back by buying stuff at the grocery store, which includes eShop points. So that is convenient.
Now speaking of cheap 3DS games, I got an email earlier today that Kemco is putting pretty much all of their 3DS stuff 50% off. So if there were any Kemco RPGs that were on your wish list, now's the time to grab them.
Get on it, Chris. It's your time to shine.
I got most of them for 100% off, so I'm good on Kemco RPGs on the 3DS for sure.
Are you
ever really good on Kemco RPGs?
Now, the thing I need to find out is how many of those games are on the 3DS that I don't have that also have not been ported to Windows or Switch or anything like that. Because, like, I feel like pretty much my whole, like, 3DS collection, except for the original Alphadia, is available on Switch now.
Oh, Pernell, do you have Attack of the Friday Monsters?
I don't think I do.
Okay, you got to get that game. That game rules.
I am officially studying my thing now, because apparently, for the first time ever since having this system, I reached my capacity of storage. It was like, you need 48 blocks of space. Like, what the hell? But I mean, I got some demos I could delete, so that's not that big a deal. But still.
But you'll never get them again.
Not the demos.
Don't lose those valuable demos.
Still have to sample a game I have on the shelf.
You still have 28 plays left of one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
That is true. Yeah, freaking nonsense those things.
Oh, look
were.
At this 3DS ROM site. I wonder if they got some demos on here.
As long as you delete them in 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah, that's how it is, right?
That's how it works.
Yeah, I was kind of I wasn't joking. I guess these demos are like 2,000 quote unquote blocks. So open. Wait a minute, that's bullshit. It says I have 103,000 open blocks. How do I need more space?
Storage is weird on the 3DS. It doesn't make any sense.
Maybe you need it on the console.
I don't know. Does it have one on console storage? I don't think it does.
Yeah, a little bit. No.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't. It's only
I said that with confidence.
No, well,
the SD card. Yeah,
because I'm very confident in the magic of the 3DS. Let's just be real here. I loved my 3DS, which is why I'm sad it's being moonlit.
I don't have my 3DS anymore. I sold it a while ago.
No,
it was a cool one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a Zelda one.
Which Zelda one?
Link Between Worlds.
I'm playing on the Majora's Mask one now.
I had that Link one, that Zelda one.
Oh, yeah? Well, mine is red.
Ooh.
Nice.
Oh! Well, mine is broken.
Good thing you're buying games for it.
I got that Galaxy new 3DS XL. I was like, this is all I need.
I'd love to get a 3DS XL, or a new 3DS XL, but, whew, expensive.
They got expensive, yeah.
Very expensive.
That. I have the Persona 3DS XL, but not the one with the freaking Joy thumbstick in there, because, you know, that was before the new 3DS came out.
Yeah, both of the new 3DSs are very, well, the new 3DS and the new 2DS are both very expensive. I think the 3DS just in general, unless you're getting an original 2DS, just fucking expensive.
Yeah, real lucky that I, like, hopped on getting a launch 3DS to get modded for streaming, because, like, I would not make that expense now. I'll just be like everybody else, I can't stream 3DS, but yeah.
Well, I'm just taking care of it as best I can, because the battery does die. Like, I had to replace my battery this year, so now I got maybe another 5 more years of a decent battery in this thing, and it back to playing my portable on a plug. It's almost like what the Steam Deck will become someday, but by then I won't care, because I like the Steam Deck as it is anyway. So, but
yeah, Steam Decks, I feel like that's never going away though.
That is true, but they will be like, hey, here's the new iteration of the Steam Deck. Buy the Steam Deck 2.5. It's going to be like cell phone upgrades. It's
what I'm thinking. Like small incremental upgrades, and just littering like the landscape of, like, you know, thrift stores and whatnot,
and landfills and stuff,
and landfills. Actual landfills. Yeah.
It's like I don't know how I feel about it, but on one hand, I'm like, so long as the thing functions, I don't feel the need to really upgrade mine, unless it just stops working somehow. Which, who knows? Maybe there's a fucking kill switch in there somewhere. It's like, whoa, gotta sell those new copies.
Yeah, I was on the fence about getting a Steam Deck with our tax return. Ashley was like, you could get one cool thing.
In your case, I'm not sure if how much use you'd get out of it, though, because you use your PC often and you're at it. So for you, it would
bathrooms
just be,
exist.
Oh, come on.
My bedroom exists.
But then you have other things in the bedroom. I know. I know. I've been there.
Has been here.
But yeah, I don't know, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy playing my 3DS, or sorry, my Steam Deck in bed sometimes and stuff like that, but I feel like I bought it more, obviously it's money is money, but I bought it more for playing it in other places, and also the fact that I generally just don't do PC gaming that much. Like, it's more inconvenient for me to play on my computer, but...
Yeah, it's hard for me just to sit here and play something.
Exactly, right? So in that regard, it just doesn't make sense. If I were only buying it for, like, to play in bed or to play in the bathroom, heaven forbid, in the bathroom, I think the cost of entry is a little too high. It needs the fact that you're going to be using it in other places, or you just don't do much with your computer.
See, that's why that wasn't the cool thing that we got.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I guess.
What did you end up getting?
PSVR.
Oh, I don't
know, man. I mean, you can't really play it on the bathroom. I mean, if I bought my PSVR, I'd want to use it in places where I don't really use my computer.
If I get a long enough cord, I could probably play it in the bathroom.
No one wants to know about what y'all are doing in the bathroom with your VR stuff.
We're doing so much in the bathroom.
Aki, what the hell are you playing over there? Why do I hear music when you talk?
Something in the bathroom.
Because I forgot to mute it.
That's what happens when you play in the bathroom.
I don't play games in the bathroom. What the hell?
Mm-hmm. Not even phone games? Yes, she builds Gunpla in there.
Also, I stand corrected.
Phone games.
There is system memory. God damn it.
I have to remember, I didn't even have a smartphone until like last year or something, okay? I don't... When I go to the bathroom, it's because I need to go to the bathroom.
The bathroom. This is that. Just call this episode "To the Bathroom We Go" or something, because this is all about potty talk.
Yeah, I feel like we're in a bad place right now.
Yeah.
No.
I just wanted to talk about getting a VR and how improved it is. And
PottyCast was a
so
good
you
joke.
Have so you
I
have been
recognize that.
Thank you. I am fine with your part of the conversation. I'm just not fine with why we had to bring it into the potty, you sickos.
Why will we not? You know who you hang out with on this show? Potty people.
I mean,
potty
all
people,
my potty people
here.
Put your hands in the air.
Potty people!
But you go like, figure Aki's the most potty mouthed.
Oh, touche.
Very true.
So, like, but I guess to take it back to a topic that doesn't make some of us cringe, what is your take on this PSVR? Because I've had very little exposure. I watched a guy play Resident Evil Village on it, and it was very quick and awkward.
What was quick and awkward about? Like, what do you mean?
The awkward part being just like, obviously quick being that we were moving on to do something different. So it wasn't the reason why we were hanging out. He was just wrapping up the session. But he was in the tutorial. And I guess for Resident Evil Village, they added like an extra section to kind of teach you the VR mechanics. Mm. So I haven't played Village, the normal Village. So this might be in the game in general in some different way. So they had you picking up the knife. And to use the knife, you have to like actually reach down, grab the knife. And you have to like kind of keep the controller clenched to consider yourself holding the knife. You can actually sheathe the knife by like moving your hand around, like down to your waist and letting it go. And then you can even throw the knife across the room. So it was just like watching my friend, like trying to come to grips with like, I can hold the knife. I can sheathe the knife. I can unsheathe the knife. I can throw the knife. And then just like playing through it over and over again. It's just like, fumbling about as he did. I'm like, yeah, this seems like it could be pretty fun, but at the same time, this is hilarious to watch because I'm not wearing the headset.
That's absolutely like nothing that I've done. The first thing I did was Gran Turismo. I fully expected I would get sick immediately playing a driving game in VR. I played a few races and I felt fine. Mm-hmm. The tracking is incredible. It is such night and day between the original PSVR with those shitty Move controllers and using a shitty web camera compared to having actual full-on tracking, you know, helmet-out tracking with cameras built into the headset. It's just night and day difference, and it is a lot more fun and a lot more comfortable. The visuals are highly, highly improved. You don't have that screen door effect that you kind of got with the first one. Everything is crystal clear. Everything looks good. There is kind of like, you got to find a really good sweet spot. And even still, like the surrounding area is kind of blurry. And it's just like the center of where your vision is crystal clear. It's kind of weird, but I'm getting used to it. From the games I've played, it's fun. It tracks well. I don't know if it's worth the asking price, but it is getting me back into reviewing things. So we'll be talking about some games on the next episode about PSVR. So.
Oh, are you gonna be the PSVR man for the show?
Are you going to be?
You never freaking know, man. I'm crazy like that.
Well, if you get one, let me know.
We'll see. I've always been like weary of like VR. It usually started with the idea of the fact that wearing glasses on old models haunted. Made it useless. Says you. I mean, you've never seen the Visions. I've seen the Visions. They're fucked up. But no, like just the back on old VR setups and all that, it never felt comfortable to use them wearing glasses. And while I have heard they're getting better with that, it already left the stigma in me to be like, yeah, I don't really feel comfortable with this. It's almost like seeing people That's talk about fair. How cool it is to wear shades and you wear glasses, so it just doesn't click unless you get prescription shades, and then I ain't got money for that. But, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. VR. I don't know if I want to.
VR, yes!
I don't know if I want to test anyone playing it with glasses on the first VR. Ashley's sister decided to try it with glasses on, and the glasses scratched the lenses.
Oh no!
Yeah,
too expensive. So when you
play, and so when you play the game,
they were plastic on the VR on the PSVR one. I don't know what they're made of on the new one. They might be glass. I haven't.
You want to find out?
No.
I mean, they're haunted, so probably made of someone's blood or bone.
Yeah, souls. Obviously, souls.
No, the souls are embedded.
What were we talking about with Soul?
PSVR. What do you think of it?
I like it. It really is. It's a solid device, and I'm looking forward to playing it more. I am way too out of shape for some of these games.
Nope. None of that shit. That just means you got to build up to
it. Oh, no. I'm going to wait until tomorrow. I actually ordered off Amazon sweat face masks, like cloth face masks,
my that man, I could wear yes.
to help with all my sweating instead of it dripping all over the headset.
Good play. So.
I totally, like, my mind was slow to catch up to that, and I thought sweat, or like, what is it, sweat face masks was like a new game.
I love sweat face masks. It's my favorite game. But now, like, I can relate topical. To like a. Because the one time I did use, it wasn't a PSVR, it was whatever, one of the, what was the one that people use for PCs that isn't Sony related?
The Quest?
Oculus, there we go, Oculus Rift. Friend of mine had one of those, and while he was getting ready for us to go do something, and I was like, okay, well, I'll just see what the hell this is, and he let me play Beat Saber. And I want to say I played two songs on it, and it was a very uncomfortable wear. And I also sweat all over the damn thing. And I didn't even feel bad about it because he's the one who said, here, play Beat Saber. He knows what the hell happens when you play Beat Saber.
Oh, yeah.
So at the time, I didn't. But I knew afterwards. It's like, whoa, dude, your device is all gunky now. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm bummed Beat Saber's not available yet. It's apparently on the way. I don't know if it's going to be free for previous owners. If your DLC is going to carry over, I hope it does. Because I bought a bunch of songs. But they have a game called Synth Riders that is very similar, but it has like orbs that you hit with your fists and you and rails that you kind of track along. And it has a very electronic heavy soundtrack, and it is really, really cool and a workout.
You beat the stuffing out of those orbs. Get them. Yeah.
I'm going to ponder the stuffing out of those orbs.
Yeah. that's the one we'll be talking mode. About next episode. So.
Pondering orbs? The orbs.
You have to tell Chris about pacifism mode, where you just let the orbs go by, and you just think about the feelings that each orb shared when it went by your head, and you'll get a perfect score somehow by doing that.
Aki, how are
it's
you
the only way to unlock the true ending.
I don't know. I just want to kick orbs.
There's no tracking on your feet.
Yeah.
Well, they need to change that. Somehow. No. I don't know how.
Should we get to games we're talking about this episode?
Yes.
I'm here to chew bubble gum and kick orbs.
We'll say pacifist mode for next week.
Yes. Y'all ready for reviews?
Y'all ready for this? Where's all this damn energy coming from? I blame the tofu. There you go.
I ate peanut butter M&Ms. I'm good.
That's energetic. energy boosting too.
Actually, okay. when I eat lots of sugar, it's the opposite.
We're done. We're done. First game.
One more thing.
Son of a bitch.
Tim, I bought Pinball Pulse.
Nice. Enjoy.
How is it?
Well, I literally just bought it. I can't tell you. It's a buy. Clearly.
We'll talk about it next week. Pinball Pulse. Let's talk about more things we're going to talk about next week.
Yay. First game to talk about tonight is called Little Witch Nobeta, developed by Pupuya Games, published by Idea Factory International, released March 7th on PS4 and Switch for $49.99, guided by a small black cat. An amnesiac little witch named Nobeta delves deep into a mysterious castle. Inside, dangers lurk around every corner. Encounter frightful enemies, powerful bosses, and magical puzzles in this unique Souls-like 3D action shooter. Can you reach the throne and uncover the secrets of your past? Pernell, tell us about your time with Little Witch Nobeta.
I have a question.
I didn't even start yet!
Yes, it's based on everything else. How do you spell Nobeta? Is it like no beta?
No,
it's in the Discord. You can read it.
Well, it's like I'm no lazy. Beta, like beta, alpha, gamma. No,
you're in Discord.
Okay. Yeah, but I'm lazy.
Fucking yeah!
It's like easier than having someone. Whatever.
The listeners aren't in Discord. They might want to know.
Well, some of them are.
Since we haven't started yet, shout out to Lloyd Berry, who just dropped a 15-month sub. And shout out to Rootbeer, who subbed before we went live. So,
hey, Rootbeer.
Anyway, Little Witch Nobeta. What is Little Witch Nobeta?
So, Little Witch Nobeta is a game about a little girl who happens to be a witch, who happens to be no name Nobeta, who stumbles across a castle at the very beginning of the game. So, there's no build up to it. And she just knows she needs to explore this castle to find out what is up. She's like, it's almost like she just kind of has a thought injected in her head that says, find the throne, follow the black cat to the throne. So that is essentially what you are doing in the game. You are exploring this large, very large castle in hopes of finding this throne and thereby divulging whatever secrets lie in store for you to discover. The gameplay is surprisingly fun, and I know you're like, well, duh, but no, it's,
I would hope it is.
I didn't know going in that it would be fun in the way I was that it turned out to be. I was thinking it'd be like some kind of bunch of, like, you know, cute things attacking a little cute witch, you know, Idea Factory and whatever, but no, this is surprisingly, I don't know, it's got a very engaging feel to it. Like, you're exploring this place, it has a sort of action, not FPS, like third person, like gunplay styling to it, even, because you don't have a ton of moves, but what you can do is you can walk and, of course, run, and running drains your stamina. If you run too long and burn out your stamina, you will actually trip and fall with one of those cute sounds, and leaving you pretty vulnerable to counterattack if that happens. So don't let that happen to you.
What was that sound again, Pernell?
Yeah, she makes one of those noises. But in addition to that, she can swing her staff as a melee attack. It's not the preferred way to attack, with the exception of one spell, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. But the main reason why you want to use your melee attack which use the staff is it's a good way to regenerate mana, which you use for casting spells, which is your main attack method in the game. You are able to find four different spells as you progress through the game. Let me rephrase that. Four different attack spells as you progress through the game, each encompassing a different elemental, though this game doesn't really deal in the form of elemental weakness properties and all that. They just have different functions and, like, types of bullet use. The thing I like about the way spells work in this game is that they have a basic attack form, and then if you want to charge it up, you have to actively chant the spell. So you press a button, she starts to chant the spell that you have equipped, and while this is happening, she can't run because she's concentrating and focusing on chanting the spell. If you attempt to do a dodge roll while this is happening, she stops chanting to dodge, and then she gets her composure back, and she resumes chanting the spell. All the while, you're watching this gauge go up that determines whether or not you finish saying the spell or not, and once you've done so, you will be in the position to use the spell's, let's call it, tertiary effect. And I say tertiary effect because the secondary effect is what's happening to you while the spell has been charged. For example, it took me a while to realize this at one point, but the ice spell
allows you to have a shield up that prevents you from taking environmental damage until you use the spell's charged form, which is sort of like homing ice crystals. If you wait too long, the spell charge will just wear out and you'll lose it. So you can't just like charge a spell and then run around indefinitely, happy-go-lucky. My favorite being the fire spell, though, because while you charge that one up, your staff becomes more powerful. So now suddenly you can start whacking jerks and beating this tough out of them and getting magic back at the same time. It's kind of a nice kismet situation going on there. But you can change the spells at the flick of a button, which I do like. And then you get a few other a few other bonus spells that are meant for like exploration, like, for example, a double jump or like a counter attack. But for the most part, you're just getting these few skills and you're exploring the castle, flicking switches, you know, hopping around, dodging, you know, environmental hazards. And if you die, you respawn back at statues. I don't want to call it Dark Souls-esque, even though the darn game itself is like Souls-like, because that's the buzz. But this game isn't punishing like Dark Souls is, I don't think. The only downside to dying, really, is they claim that if you are cursed, you will leave behind your level up essence, which you get by beating enemies up. But even cursed, I never really noticed much loss. Like, I may lose, like, if I'm carrying 300 souls, for example, or spirits, or whatever the hell the currency is called, I might leave behind 20 out of the 300 and something. So, hardly the usual, oh my god, I lost everything I've been carrying. This is horrible. But thankfully, it's not a big deal. So, but the one thing I don't like about dying is that any consumable items that you have used stay gone. So consumables can be found in chests or in breakable objects. And those consumables can sometimes provide curse status in exchange for healing. Other times they're just straight up healing or defense buffs or attack buffs. Or even like, I guess, mana charge stations where you can set it on the ground and get either magic charges back or health charges back over a period of time, as long as you're in that zone. But if you lose them and you die, you're like, okay, I want to try the boss again. I need more juice, but I've used up all my stuff, all my spirits, so I can't buy them. And I already used the ones I found in chests. You have to go around beating enemies up willy-nilly to get enough back to replenish your supply to try the boss again. Though, with that said, every once in a while I have come across some of the weaker healing items just in objects before the boss. So it's not like you're going in there completely buck naked. You're just going in there a little less clothed than you would be if you had the real goods.
Not butt naked, slightly less clothed. How very PC.
That's right. That's right. That's what I'm a gentleman.
This isn't like a pervy game. It's T rated. So it can't be that crazy.
No, you're not naked in a game. I'm saying it in the sense of like, going unprepared, just different ways of stating it. I'm having fun with my dialogue here. That's all. You're not naked in the game physically.
Well, you never know with some of these games.
And honestly, you say that, but apparently I learned through talking about the game that the social media account for this thing is a little wild. So if you were following the social media account for Little Witch Nobetta, you might think it did have some lewd crap going on. But fortunately for my play, I came across nothing of the sort, though there might be some costumes you can unlock that I didn't unlock that might lead to that. I have no idea, and I hope to never find out, because the game itself, I think, is fine. I enjoy my time with it, and I do appreciate it for what it is. And the one nice thing about it I didn't even mention, well, two nice things about it, is I mentioned that you can level up by using spirits and spending them to upgrade your character in a number of different stats. But from my experience, the cost to upgrade the stats is decent enough, reasonable enough, that I didn't feel like I had to, quote-unquote, establish a build. I could just dump stats across the board as I saw fit, and then when I wanted to upgrade something different, I would just upgrade that. Never really felt like a fuss issue to upgrade my character. And in addition to that, the second thing is that, whereas in like a typical, you know, like Souls-esque game, there's lots of equipment to consider and what build do I need to have for my character? What type of armor? What type of weapon style? This game has none of that. There are no equipables. It's just at most you'll find some objects on the ground that have flavor text when you open up the items menu, but you can't use them. They don't buff you or anything. So you don't have to really think about that. It's all about playing through the game, beating things up, getting your ass handed to you, and then trying again without all the hassle of like proper build structure and fashion souls. So at the end of the day, I came away from this game very happy with it. I do enjoy what I got out of it. I would recommend it to people. The cost can be a little out there, but I'm not here to recommend people based on how much they're going to pay. You choose what you want to spend on the games you're going to play. But for the game itself, I genuinely think it is worth the experience, and it is a lot of fun.
Well, it is $49.99. What is your verdict at that price?
Oh, God, no. I kid. Buy is definitely a buy it in my book.
Cool. Sounds good. Next game is Loud, My Road to Fame, developed and published by Hyperstrange, released February 23rd on Steam for $9.99, a wholesome music-filled arcade rhythm game in which a young reclusive rocker goes on a journey of self-discovery. Once she begins to follow her dreams and find her inner voice, she discovers that it is Loud. Tim, what's going on in Loud, My Road to Fame?
All right, so it's a rhythm game about this girl going from playing pretend guitar on her broom in her bedroom to skyrocketing to rock star fame. You get, there's the main, I guess, attraction is the story mode, which you got to play through to unlock all the songs, of which there's like 27, 29, something like that, all told. Not all of them are in the story mode. There's some that are only available in the quick play. You unlock those along the way. But yeah, it's like, okay, she's a girl pretending to play guitar, and then she gets her first guitar, and then she decides she's going to play at a train station, and then she finds some girls who want to form a band, and then they just stop talking to each other suddenly. That is not expounded upon at all. And then she plays a show at a thing and, you know, keeps moving on up the music ladder very quickly. It's a short road to fame. But
is it a fun road to fame?
Yeah, it's fine. It's a rhythm game where you have six lanes. There's three on either side of the screen. This is not the first game that's taken that approach to rhythm game lanes. It is not my favorite because it can be very... I find it difficult to keep track of both sides of the screen just when in situations where things get busy and you're concentrating your attention kind of on the left three lanes, I can't always tell. Like, I'll know that things are coming in on the right, but I can't quite gauge what buttons I need to hit first, and things get messy. Yeah. It's not my favorite for just kind of zoning out with a rhythm game, but it's fine, and it's effective, and it feels good with the music. There's a nice, like, kind of, like, these stars... are what comes in. They're the big beats you have to hit, and they have like this kind of, it looks like, you know, somebody cut out paper from a notebook and colored them in. So it has, you know, that teen, I don't know, I did this myself sort of thing, a cool style to it. And yeah, you are mostly just tapping on, it maps out to like up, left, and down on the D-pad, or the three buttons on the other side of the controller. I think the Steam Deck follows the Xbox style buttoning. And it is recommended you play this game with a controller. Obviously, it seems like it would be a psychological pain in the ass if you're trying to map this to a keyboard and mouse.
Oh, God.
So play it with a controller. Yeah, it's just meant to be like that. So you have some beats you just got to tap on. There's some you have to hold on. And there's some where you just mash the button on them. There aren't any where you need to like hit and hold on two lanes at once, maybe on the absolute hardest difficulty, but I did not encounter that. So it's usually just one button at a time, though, you know, obviously it will have you frequently hopping back and forth between them. Every song has three difficulty levels. The harder, easy, and normal are available by default, but you got to beat it on normal before it unlocks the harder one. You must prove your metal before you can be more metal. Like each sort of period in her growth as a rock star has like three or four songs to it, and they're bookended by little story sequences that transition you from one to another. As you go, you unlock more songs. Oh, you know, you'll unlock the songs you play in free play. You'll unlock some extra songs to play in free play. You unlock some different looks for the girl, because she is constantly changing her appearance. Not to be exhaust about it, that's her right, I'm not judging. So you can customize that as you go through, and each stage has a different venue. All the stages are it's just her It's just her in the middle of the stage. Even when she's with a band, you don't see the rest of the band. The music itself, I hope you like punk guitar instrumentals, because that is pretty much almost the entire game.
I love punk instrumentals, yeah.
Well, good news. This game is right up your alley. There is not a song with lyrics in the main story until you get to the last song, and then it's like, holy shit, lyrics. All right. Okay. There they are. It's not bad, but it does get a little repetitive, which is, you know, there's just like, but that's what the game is. You know, it's very focused on this story and what this girl's into, and she is not like trying out different genres of music, really. It's just that's what it is. But sometimes, you know, it's hard for me to say like that any songs really stood out to me, you know, that I remember. They all kind of like ran together because they're just all this guitar instrumental stuff.
No, it's meant to be one band, right? Like, I think the Steam page says it's like the Hyper Strange band did all the music.
Oh, okay. Oh, one band did the music.
Yeah,
okay,
every track in Loud has been produced by Hyper Strange's own band.
Right. Yes. There you go. So, yeah.
And that makes me extremely happy.
Okay. Maybe a little repetitive for me. It works. It's fine and functional as a game, but it was just kind of like...
It could have used more variety.
At a certain point, could have used some more variety. Maybe could have used some more songs with lyrics just to kind of pop a little bit more. Like... when she's in her first band phase, like one of the girls, she says like, oh, one of the girls says my lyrics are so great. And it's just like, okay, let's hear them. Like, it's part of the story. You said that. Well, let's hear your great lyrics. Come on now. You know, so that left me a bit wanting. But yeah, so you'll get through the story mode in a couple hours, and then... You have the free play, which, again, you unlock a few more songs that are not in the story mode. And from there, you know, you're pretty much just straight up score chasing, trying to up the score. It does, for that purpose, it does have like a streak bonus, streak multiplier, like the good old Rock Band Guitar Hero games, where the more you get in a row, the better your score gets. And then if you miss a beat, then... it resets back to one. There are little like highlight sections that are good for more score. So, you know, you could do that. It's like, I'm trying not to be like down on this game, but it's just like, you know, it is perfectly fine for what it is. It is a $10 rhythm game with music that is not bad, that plays well and doesn't do anything spectacular, but it just is, and sometimes that's just fine, especially when the game's only $10.
Yeah, so it sounds like a straight down the middle try it.
No, I'd say like if you're interested in rhythm games, like it is worth a purchase, but I'm not saying like, oh my god, you have got to play this game. I'm saying if you are interested in it, you will get your worth. And it's rock solid. It's just not like, I'm not going to go around telling people like, oh my god, you have to play Loud. But if somebody says like, oh, I heard of this game Loud, or they say, I am looking for a rhythm game to play right now that isn't full of Final Fantasy music and is $10, then this might be your thing. But if you have a more of a budget and you want Final Fantasy music, there is a better rhythm game that's out right now, for sure. But yeah, I don't know if that's on Steam. Maybe it is. Not important. The point is that Loud is a fine game for $10 that I think you'll enjoy. Even if you only just kind of play through the story mode once, yeah, it'll tickle that rhythm game itch, and you'll be like, okay, cool.
Cool, okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it for you, Tim.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, I was very weary right before I came in to record. It was ended up being a long day somehow.
Things okay?
Yeah, no, it was okay. Just my kid was a lot. Sometimes the kid is just like, why are you like this right now? You don't need to be. I like burned the back of my mouth or something when I was eating lunch, so it feels like I've had something stuck in my throat all afternoon. And it's been, I don't know if I've ever done this before. So it was like really weird and at a certain point, like alarming to me until my wife was just like, stop it. It's just your ape brain telling you something's wrong because you don't know what it is.
Yeah, I sneezed yesterday and bit my tongue, but like the back of my tongue with my molars.
Oh,
so, yeah. Yeah, I've had uncomfortable mouth all day, too. Ew. Luckily, my day job is talking to people all the time.
Oh, so that's helpful.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good. So, yeah, I'm hoping a good night's rest will clear it up and I'll be less annoyed and trying to constantly swallow all day tomorrow.
Sweet. On the bright side, tomorrow, bonbons.
Bonbons. Bonbons. I don't even know what they are yet, except for like bonbons. One. I know of like one bonbon has been announced, so maybe more.
I am so
evening.
Confused.
We're talking about wrestling. That's all.
Oh,
delicious,
okay.
Delicious bonbons.
Yeah, all right. Before I go, Chris.
All
right. Have you played the original Jack and Daxter?
This has to be one you played. This has to be.
Well, that's the thing is, I think I did, but this, it would be like so long ago now, and I don't own it. So,
bummer.
Like, it's not one that I have,
to and this day,
I don't recall playing it.
Well, I almost feel like in that regard, you might be like, if you don't recall if you played it or not, that almost is a reason to be like, well, maybe I don't need this one.
Yeah. I don't know. I love it. It's my favorite. It's actually my favorite Naughty Dog game.
Really?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe I need to play it then. Shit.
It's
such a good 3D
you.
Platformer. It's awesome. It's so fun. Like,
were you on board with what people, I mean, it's kind of related, but not the same game, but were you on board with everybody that was complaining back when Jack 2 came, like, oh, they made it gritty. Like, did you feel like it was a reasonable transition?
It was definitely weird and did feel like it was a little riding on the coattails of, GTA, which had popped off at that point. It's like, okay, well, we need to have him Jack in cars. And the second one is my least favorite of that trilogy. I think the third one brought it back a bit more, but either way, the first one doesn't have guns.
Yeah.
Because I don't know this series very well, which number is the one that came out with the PS3 at launch?
What came out with the Jack games?
Wait a minute. No, I might be thinking of Ratchet and Clank now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. No, those games are great.
Yeah, Jack 1, 2, and 3 are all PS2 games.
I didn't get into Ratchet and Clank until the remake of the first one, and I played it, and I was like, holy shit, this is so much fun. This is what everyone was talking about.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys, I prefer Insomniac's work over Naughty Dog. I'm not into the Uncharted series. I'm not into the Last of Us series. I liked Jack and Daxter, the original, and I would more of that stuff.
Well, I love that. I'm in agreement with you because, well, obviously I didn't play Jack and Daxter yet, but I love pretty much every Ratchet and Clank game I've ever played. Even if the games can feel samey, it's a good samey. It's like Mario feeling samey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a Dragon Quest fan, yo. Like, I'm
same mechanics, same monsters, same art.
I'm over there.
Fucking 30, 40 years at this point, almost.
Yeah, and like I play shmups too, like all the time, and like, yo, I know what those are. I know how similar they all are.
Yeah,
Lloyd is saying thinks Jack and Daxter games are on one of the PlayStation Plus tiers.
They are. So. It's the most expensive one, I believe. Yeah, so is Ratchet and Clank is on the most expensive tier. Otherwise, I would have played a lot more of them last year.
I'll just play it on PS2.
Here, how about to say, thank heavens they're still on my shelf. I did deal with that mess.
I did when it came time to renew my PlayStation Plus subscription. I did not maintain the extra level because that game library is not worth keeping around, in my opinion.
Do they have Jumping Flash?
I don't know. Well, maybe on the most expensive level.
What did they have on the level you had that you said wasn't worth it? So on
the extra level is just like, I think PS4 games is what's in there. And anything that is like PS3, PS2, PS1 is on the premium like $120 tier. Yeah, the premium tier. And the fact is like,
they don't put out many.
Yeah, well, it was sad when I was going through the library with my kid, like looking for games for him to play, and everything he would have been interested in was like on the premium tier. I was like, oh, well, sorry, bud. He's getting frustrated. I'm getting frustrated. And you know, the stuff they'd put on there, it wouldn't necessarily be bad, but it was either games I had played or wasn't interested in playing or already owned in some other way, shape, or form. And like the stuff that I would actually want to get into, the old shit was all on the more expensive tier. And I was not willing to make that step. And to my knowledge, the only like, you know, Game Pass style game they had was Stray. And I don't think there was anything after that.
Chia is later this month.
What's later this month?
Chia. T-C-H-I-A.
Okay, not like a pet.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have the extra level subscription anymore, so I
Chia care. Pick.
All right, I'm not going to hold up this podcast anymore. I'll catch you guys later.
All right,
take it easy.
See ya. Right. See ya, Tim.
It's terrible, Purnell.
No, it was great.
No, next game to talk about is Dark Ultimate Edition, developed by Unfold Games, published by Feardemic, released March 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S for $19.99. Meet Lloyd, not the one in chat, a boy whose lucid dream quickly turns into a lucid nightmare he can't wake up from, hard as he may try. Help him navigate the twisted dream world and explore the deepest, darkest corners of his mind in search of a way to rouse from his sleep. Aki, what is going on in Dark with a Q?
Okay, and this, obviously you play as Lloyd, because that was literally just mentioned. You are in your dreams, like was just mentioned. Why did you have to mention all this? This is like taking so much away from me, man.
Well, then tell us about the gameplay. You don't have to tell us about the story if we already covered it.
In this, lots of this, it's all a puzzle game. It's various different types of puzzles. Lots of them involve you, because you're lucid dreaming, you're able to walk on walls. You just have to walk up to them and then step on them. And you can do that full 360, go have fun with it, to figure your way out of each area. And when you get out of each area, you wake up in a different place and you're like, oh, I need to go to bed. And that starts the next dream. There are 7 of them to go through, and they all have different puzzles you have to solve. All of them, for the most part, just involve figuring out where items are and placing them where they need to be to, you know, open things or set off explosives or what have you. And it's all done by moving all over the place, over the walls and the such. There are a couple levels where you end up changing the perspective of the entire level. So let's say you're at like a 4-way street. Since everything is on a 2D plane, you actually shift the area, which causes everything to jitter. So let's say there's like a trash can next to you. When you shift it, it might knock the trash can over, which blocks one of the pathways, so on and so forth. So it's really fucking trippy.
it looks trippy. I love the visual style in this game.
Yeah, it's all very dark and very much... The entire time I played it originally, because there was a standard edition, then there was DLC, and then there was a complete edition, which I reviewed, and now there's the ultimate edition, which obviously I am currently reviewing. Throughout a lot of this, I thought he was like a vampire or something, because it's so dark, and he kind of looks like a vampire to me personally. and, you know, sometimes in some of the levels, there's monsters that might get you if they get too close to you. Usually they travel along a very set path, and you just have to get into little hidey holes and wait for them past you, and then move on to the next area to go collect whatever you need to collect, and so on and so forth. And they all look like crazy monsters. One of them looks like a very ugly vampire. Another one is like this person with a trombone for a head, or maybe it's a trumpet. I don't know those instruments very well. Sorry. stuff like that. So it's all very weird. And it all really involves you just finding the exit, which is just a hole in a wall that you climb through. It's just all the puzzles revolve around you getting to that point. And since they're all so different, it's kind of hard to go through them. Sometimes it's, oh, you need to find certain amount of these items and put them up, and then that'll open the pathway. But to get those items, you have to go through a lot of other puzzles that are all completely different from each other. Some of them are, here's a maze, do the maze real quick. And there's some timed achievements for some of this stuff, so have fun with that shit, because some of it sucks.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. There's especially a bunch of them in the two DLC missions that make up chapter 8 and 9 of it, which I believe is a prequel, maybe? I'm not really sure where it stands.
I'm not sure where the crypt stands, but the tower, it says he gets pulled back into the dream world. So I'm guessing that's a sequel. The crypt, it doesn't really give me any more info. It says okay. The loop of nightmares rages on. So it might be yet another sequel. Okay. That is part of the Ultimate Edition. The Ultimate Edition of the game includes the full main game, the Tower DLC, the Crypt DLC, and also a digital graphic novel called Dream Journal.
Yeah, I don't actually know what the difference between this and the Complete Edition is, because I'm pretty sure even the base game had the Dream Journal in it, because there's little collectibles that you find. Just one in every level. I think it's every level, or it's close to it anyways. And basically you find just this one page and it unlocks a chunk of the Dream Journal. And that's been in there since the very base game in the first place. And the Complete Edition had the base game in both DLCs. So I'm not sure what exactly the difference is between the Complete and the Ultimate, other than obviously the Complete wasn't on the Series X. But it was, I'm pretty sure, on the Xbox One. So I'm a little surprised that this came out both for the Xbox One and the Series S and X, honestly.
It might be one of those things where I noticed the Complete Edition is no longer available.
Ah, so that would
I'm
do it.
I'm thinking that they removed the Complete Edition and replaced it with the Ultimate Edition. So if you have both, I guess you have both achievement lists. If not, you probably missed out on the Complete Edition. I would assume that the difference is the graphic novel, but I don't know for sure.
No, I definitely know the graphic novel's in there.
I don't know.
I 100% guarantee it, because I read it back on the Complete Edition when I reviewed that.
No, well, I don't know then.
And I read it again now, too.
It's optimized. There you go. That's what it's...
That's very possible.
That's probably the big difference, that it's optimized.
And but, another big difference is one's on the Series S and X. The yeah. other one is not.
Well, this one is $20. What are your thoughts?
I really like it. The game's probably going to take you a few hours. And I really enjoyed my time with it. And if you're really bad at it, it's going to take you a bunch of tries, especially to get all the achievements for the last two levels, because there's timed puzzles in it, and each level individually is timed, and you have to get through it very, very quickly with very few mistakes if you want to get it within time.
Oh, geez.
It's fun. I 100%ed it in, like, well, technically I could have gotten it done one day, but then I started playing a different game. So yeah, but I've played it like three times now. So that's how much I like the game. I have 100% of this bitch three different times.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is The Smile Alchemist, developed by Azobox Company, published by Kemco, released March 2nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, Windows 10 Store, and Steam for $19.99. In Polta Colta, a town where humans and beasts live together, the young Nake becomes an apprentice and is training hard under the famous alchemist. His aim is to become the best alchemist in the world for a promise made with his precious friend, but a matter of great concern is worrying him. Chris, what is going on in The Smile Alchemist?
Okay, so this is a... Okay, I had to make sure I wasn't muted, so I didn't start the review and have to start over again. So let me start over again. The Smile Alchemist. So this is a Kemco RPG. Kind of looks like it was maybe originally developed for mobile, but I don't know. However, this is not a, well, I mean, it's hard to call it an RPG, honestly, but it is a Kemco game, and it, you know, yeah, you would expect that this would be a game, you know, like basically a walk around RPG kind of thing with the four characters and saving the world, whatnot. Y'all have heard the spiel before. This is actually not. There is very little adventure to be had in this game. So yeah,
I know the store page bills it as an alchemist simulator.
Yeah, even that's a little, I don't know. So what happens is that basically the story starts, and it very much reads out like a visual novel, right? Your protagonist, Nake or Nace. His teacher's name is Cyan, and I noticed the names are you know, one spelled backwards from the other. So I feel like that's gonna come up in the story in some goofy way, I'm sure. But anyways, yeah, he is training with Cyan and Cyan's daughter, who is his friend. Cyan is he's a real card. He basically tells you that you have absolutely no alchemic talent. And he refuses to teach you anything more. He spends like the first chapter being like just this total like, well, what are you even doing here, dude? Type of person. But anyway, so yeah, he kind of leaves Nace to his own devices. Fortunately, alchemy is not very hard, and you don't need talent to do it. You just need to click around a few ways. So the game operates like a novel in the sense that you are reading chapters. You literally will tell the game, I want to read the next chapter to move the story along. As long as you've met a
question.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned it goes like chapters, can you go backwards in chapters and undo choices or anything like that?
No, because you don't really make a lot of choices.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's... Like I said, it's like a visual novel. It is not a visual novel. But yeah, we'll get there. So basically, yeah, in order to move the story along, you literally just tell it that you want to move the story along. That's an option in the menu. Other options in the menu are places to go and things to do. So there's kind of a little bit of a circular kind of loop as to how you... Basically, your goal is to become a master alchemist and to raise your alchemy level to the heights of, at least, you know, unless there's some kind of plot twist I haven't gotten to, that's what the gameplay is. I've read other things that have confirmed this, though. So basically, the first thing, well, the one thing that you can do, we'll just start at a spot on the circle, is that you hire an adventurer in a tavern to gather materials for you. You don't go out and gather materials like Meridian Tavern Story or Blacksmith of the Sands or something like that. I don't remember what that one was called. But so you actually hire an adventurer that you start off with an adventurer literally named Newbie, and you can... unlock other adventurers later and other locations. You choose the location. The location's going to have the ingredients that you want in it. And of course, your adventurer is going to have his own little level and ability to gather things, different ingredients in different places. And so you go there, and then you're just presented with this grid of tiles, and your character, depending on his finding strength, will have... you know, an ability to target several of those tiles at once, and then you flip them over, and then there's your ingredients, and you can push a button to bang a tambourine and cheer them on, and if you cheer them on, or if they're just on a hot streak, that target reticule will get bigger, and you can unlock more tiles at once. Eventually, you know, you're kind of like your turns run out as far as that goes, and then you you take stock of what you got, gain experience points. Cool, you got your stuff. Okay, so time to take your stuff back to your home and use the alchemy pot thing. Folks who are familiar with Dragon Quest 8 and up will recognize this thing. So you basically learn, you know, you start off with a couple of recipes for things that you can learn, and then you can expand that in the next step. But in this step, We are going to basically take the stuff that we got, throw it into the pot, and make it into other stuff. That's alchemy. You literally do this by choosing the recipe that you want to make. It just auto tells you you can make this many based on the ingredients you have. You throw them in there and you just hold down the button. And you're given a percentage of rate of like how successful you'll be. At the beginning of the game, it's pretty much always 100, but you know, you do have to kind of balance like, you know, as the stuff gets harder, you have to balance like your success rate with how, you know, how many things you want to make. Again, like there's not really a fail state in this game. So, you know, it's really just a keep trying till you do it. But yeah, once you make all your stuff, then you can go on to the next step, which is to sell the stuff. You go to the store, you fill your stuff up on a shelf, and then you can push a button, the same button that you use to bang a tambourine, to perhaps bang another tambourine and get customers to buy your stuff. And then you get money. With that money, you can buy special ingredients at the store, or you can buy more books, learn more recipes. And like I said, as you make more stuff in the alchemy pot, your alchemy level goes up. And so now that you got more money, you can hire an adventurer to go out and get you some more stuff. And, you know, thus the circle turns. There's also a town square where you can raise the town's level by doing side quests for villagers who are just standing there in literally in Central Park. And like the game is literally like, oh, yeah, usually when people want something done for them, they stand in Central Park. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I get this. But, you know, you choose the person. They're like, I need a potion. And so you, like, give them a potion. They're like, thanks for the potion. And they give you, like, some stuff. There are these, like, rainbow pearl things that you get. And as you collect those, they unlock special things. That includes, like, all kinds of QOL and, you know, other adventurers that you can get. You know, it basically unlocks some more parts of the game and stuff. So all this to say, this is the way that you play the game. And then, like I said, when you're ready to move the story, you just move the story. There's no timer. There's no limit to times. There's no day counter. I don't think days end in this game. You just keep telling your guy to do things or telling other people to do things or making money. And then, when you're ready to read some more words and, you know, perhaps unlock some more locations and like stuff, then, just do so at your leisure.
Cool.
So well, that's the game.
The game's sitting at $20. What are your thoughts on it?
It's a weird one because, like, at some point I was like, well, there's got to be some, like, challenge or some kind of, like, you know, adventure. I was really excited about the adventure. I was like, ooh, what if, like, it's a thing like this one game, Tornico the Last Hope, where you can go into the dungeon yourself and gather up the stuff and fight enemies. And, like, no, it's not that. You know, what if, there's not any variables to add challenge to this game, so you really are just clicking around on things until the game's beaten. But so it's like, it's hard to recommend based on that, but then again, that is all video games, so if you're really looking for a pretty good read, the one thing that kind of holds the story of this game back is that the English is pretty mid. So there's some details that are lost, I think, in this one. But yeah, you can basically read through the story, click around and stuff. And I definitely sat there for a few hours and did that. So I can say that if you are fine with the fact that it's not an RPG, it's not quite a visual novel, and it's not quite a simulator, but it is fun in its own way, then yeah, go ahead and buy it. But yeah, it's hard to find the audience for this one besides folks who maybe like idle stuff. But then again, idle stuff doesn't require you clicking on it, so
yeah, it seems more like just like a chill kind of experience that
it's very chill.
As a story that you can just enjoy as you want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and again, if there's some point at which the stakes just like increase dramatically, then, you know, I do apologize that I didn't get that far, but yeah, I got far enough to be like, this seems like this is the vibe for the whole game. And, you know, I read around other reviews and stuff and everybody seems to confirm this. So, yeah, I'd say a try it.
Sounds good. Speaking of keeping things at your own pace, the next game to talk about is Afterthought, developed and published by Studios Moondowner, released February 28th on the Switch for $15.99. Navigate your way through a dreamlike world and overcome excessive boss fights. Finish the levels at your own pace while enjoying the wild and uncompromising art and soundtrack. Purnell, what does it mean by excessive boss fights?
Well, I will say that excessive boss fights involve dealing with large, menacing obstacles that you need to generally avoid and outrun or dodge their attacks to just make it to safety. It's interesting that they use how they refer to them as bosses, given the nature of them, but I guess this still counts because they are imposing and menacing figures. But Afterthought is a game that I am extremely glad I requested after getting a chance to play it, because I will probably never be good at this, but I love what it does. It does, for those who are familiar with an old game called Dust Force, I feel like these guys probably saw Dust Force and said, we can do a little better with the momentum speed running platformer, because this game has probably done it better than most others I've attempted to play. So the general idea is that you're going from left to right and very large maps. You're not just going on a 2D plane that is one screen high. You're in large environments, and your goal is to get to the exit. So sometimes you might have to reach multiple exits to unlock the final exit. And as you're doing this, you have a kit at your disposal. Just at the initial point, you can run, walk, dash, and you can jump and attack. So what are you attacking? Well, there's orbs. Orbs on the map. Blue orbs you can destroy. Red orbs are hazardous, and you got to either avoid them or block them, which you can learn later in the game. The general idea, however, is that if you just were to play through the game and go from beginning to end of every level, just trying to stumble your way through, you could do that and enjoy the music and the art, which both of which are very nice, by the way. But to get the most out of this game, eventually you're going to have to step up to the plate, as it were, and start trying to embrace the speed running or flow elements of the game. Because earlier I mentioned that you can run and jump and attack, but they did a few extra things. You want to get that extra momentum, because by itself, the dash is kind of crappy. You're not going to really want to use that too often unless you really have no choice. The gimmick, however, is that if you jump in the air and then kind of dash diagonally at the ground, you'll get a faster dash, kind of like blue sparks in Mario Kart after a hop. And if you do that at the edge of a jump, you'll get a larger jump even. You'll go flying. Same for those blue objects. You can just strike them and get an extra jump out of them if you want. But if you get that momentum I described and then strike a blue object, that'll help you maintain your momentum when you use your new jump and additional boosts and stuff like that. And you're just flying through the stages, getting from point A to point B. It's hard at first, especially if you start learning certain moves. Like, for example, the wind ability, terrible with it. To this day, I still suck at it, though I am a little bit better with the bolt ability, which allows you to like propel yourself from damaging specific types of objects. But the game, when you get all these things right, it feels fantastic to just jump through stages, dash at the ground, leap up in the air, hit a blue orb, and then jump up again with your new recharge jump ability, hit a new blue orb, all the while maintain the momentum for that first dash jump. And if you see a platform on the way, you can kind of stop in midair, dash at that platform, and re-spark your dash. Like, you just kind of have this thing where you just start chaining abilities together to get the best out of it. And the game even kind of rewards you for that, because at the end of every level, the game will give you experience points based on a number of factors, one of which is style, being how you change your moves together in the course of running through a level. And as you level up your character, you will gain access to new music in the game, new like graphical effects for your character's play style, and you'll unlock new stages as well. Now, the interesting thing about this game is that, like I said earlier, I kind of suck at it, but I do replay stages over and over and over again until I get it right. The game kind of goes out of its way to kind of let you know you don't really have to master the level on the first try. And they do that by having a feature that lets you upload scores to the internet and compare with other people. With that said, the game prohibits you from uploading your first score on any level. You can't do it. reasonably so, because ultimately what it boils down to is like saying you're not really, there's no way you're going to get a quote unquote upload worthy score on your first run. It's just not going to happen. So the idea is just saying, just go into the game, have some fun with it, get used to the level layout, and take your time, make mistakes. Hell, they even give you experience points for retrying the stage. You're not going to break the game by just retrying the stage 500 times. So if you want to try, that's your time. Do what you want. But it's just a little bit that just says, hey, we understand that a person who's going for a high speed is going to restart levels. And we understand that. So here's some exponent. Here's some bonus points for the fact that you restarted the level 50 times to get it right. So it's in the boss levels. They get ridiculous. You don't die in them per se, but you do lose time and momentum when you get hit by the boss's attacks as you're propelling yourself around the level. And furthermore, one of the methods of getting experience is to get through the level without getting hit. So good luck with that, because it ain't me. I ain't doing it. But, you know, it's worth a try if you think you got the cojones for it. All in all, I remember when Dust Force came out, and my friend Rob and I were pretty into the game. Him far more than me. Like, he perfected that game. And he's probably the only person I've ever come across in my personal life that's ever done so. I got a little ways into it, had my fun, and walked away because I just couldn't keep up with him. But I still loved my attempts at trying that game. I enjoyed the flow feeling. I enjoyed the feeling of getting a perfect run and chaining the right moves together. This game takes that and kind of amplifies it in a way that there's a number of abilities you want to learn to use. They're not all required per se, but the better you get with all the moves you unlock, the more you'll be able to perfect your stage times and the better you'll feel when you get those S ranks. And I cannot recommend this game enough. Hell, one thing I thought was funny I should mention is the main character has a voice, and there's narrative bits throughout the game here and there where she's talking to characters and such, and it plays out a story. But I've had moments where I'm redoing levels, and after a restart, she'll just kind of chime in and go, this is the one. This is going to be the one. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not. But let's see what happens anyway. Let's see what happens.
So optimistic.
Well, I just know, like, if the level is, you know, let's say a level is a mile long and I'm restarting at the 30, at the I don't know, like the 50 meter mark over and over again. I haven't even mastered that part yet. You think I got the whole mile laid out? Not a chance. Let's see how it goes there. Anything can happen. Cut me my fast break. But what I can say can happen is this game is fantastic. It's worth your money. You got the question to hit me with.
$16. What's your verdict?
Easily worth $16. This is a magnanimous buy it recommendation from me. It's a great game.
And if you're on the fence, there is a demo on the Switch eShop, so give her a download and check it out.
Yes.
Next game, Scions of Vega, developed by Tonguk Bodor, published by East Asia Soft, released March 8th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5 for $6.99. Take the role of a man on a desperate hunt to find his missing daughter. In Scions of Vega, you will guide a father as he searches the countryside in a mysterious town in hopes of bringing his daughter home. Aki, what is going on in Scions of Vega?
This is another one of those walking sims where if you walk, the story unfolds, and you don't really got to do anything. It's fantastic. In this, you play as a man who's seemingly out in the boonies with his brother, and they're obviously looking for your daughter, who I believe is supposed to be 16 or 18, something like that. She's run away from home, and it's your birthday, so, you know, fuck you, I guess. And, you know, so you're being let out here like this is so boonies, like there's not proper fucking roads type boonies. Like, this is, oh, we have to wade through this waist high water for like 30, 40 feet to get to the other side, to the shore, basically, and continue walking because there's not, you know, a proper fucking path anywhere. And your brother's like, oh yeah, I know it's been a long time since you've been out here. I'm out here all the time though, so I will let you deal with all these people that don't know you but do know me. and I'll just wait out here because, again, I guess, fuck you, I guess. And yeah, you very quickly realize something's kind of weird. All you find are children, no adults. And it's very creepy. None of them remember who their parents even are. Some of them don't remember ever having parents. And no matter what, it's creepier than hell. You might as well have walked into the Children of the Fucking Corn, as far as I'm concerned. No, thank you.
That may very well be the first time I heard you have an accent. It's there. I heard it just now. That was awesome.
I have a bunch of different accents. But
creepier than hell.
I heard water.
Creepier than hell, yeah.
God darn it. It's creepier than hell out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
I like your accent. It's good.
Well, that's good, because I don't know when you'll hear it again, because accents pop out of my mouth at random. anyway, so...
Forget about it. I don't know when you're going to hear it next.
I don't think I have that accent.
She is going to cut you, Joe.
I mean, no, I don't... Have I ever actually done that accent? If so, I'm very sorry.
No, that'd be everyone. Funny as hell, though.
God, don't tempt me.
Anyway,
so you have in everywhere where you find these children, you also find a letter from their parents or parent or whatever, basically giving you a little bit of backstory. There's this weird cult around here that's being fucky wucky and only talking to the children and avoids the parents like the plague. That doesn't sound right. That sounds like that's when you need to get a gun. And apparently none of these people decided to do that, because none of them are fucking around anymore. So, you know, it gives you a backstory about all their lives and about this weird cult that none of them name or tell or write anything useful the fuck about at all. And you find a key, because they have decided to lock a gate in between basically all of their houses. In this big long pathway, there's just this big iron gate that they're like, okay, no one can get through here. I've locked it. And you live on the other side of this gate, so you lock the gate between you and the next neighbor. And they've done that for a number of gates. Of what fucking use that is, I have no fucking clue, because none of these are on farmland, so all these stupid motherfuckers have to leave and therefore have to unlock each and every gate. But the key only works for one gate. So I guess they had to call their neighbor and be like, hey, can you unlock the gate between our houses so I can go, you know, get some milk and eggs? And they have to keep doing that for every subsequent fucking neighbor until they get the fuck out of there. They are not very smart people. Then again, they also live out in the fucking boonies. So, big shocker they didn't think this through. And yeah, it's a pretty quick game. There's all the achievements in it are just for playing through the game, which is nice. Because lots of these weird little walking sims that I've reviewed in the past handful of months, same company. And they usually have like, oh, scare birds away, or oh, shoot these imps that you find in one level. And if you miss them, you have to replay the whole fucking game all over again. This game doesn't have anything like that. It's just do the things that you have to do to continue, and you get all your achievements. It's nice. It's very nice. I like that. I appreciate that. And unlike lots of the other games, you don't have to go and stand in a circle and have a game basically read the story to you while you're in the circle and then go and find the next fucking circle. Instead, the characters actually talk. Well, your brother talks, your character silent because he's a dipshit. So, you know, you actually get the story as you're walking, which is nice. And then, you know, obviously then there's also the reading part that you have to do, which is, it makes sense. So I'm not going to fault that for making me read more again. So yeah, that's fine. It's pretty quick. It'll take you a couple hours maybe to beat. It's pretty straightforward. There's 6 or 7 gates, and it's, you don't really have to do much in the way of any puzzle. Most of the puzzles are just brute force them, and they're all pretty quick. Like, you have one where you just have to move
three different levers and you have to figure out which ones go up and which ones go down and push the button right next to them. And when you get it right, a door will open. It's just that simple, which is just flick the fucking things until you get the right combo. It's not complicated.
Yeah. Well, the game's $7. What do you think?
I think it's very much worth that. This is a nice, quick little game. And anyone who likes achievements, this is a quick, I think like 12 achievements it was or something. Go get it. You'll be happy. It's easy. Enjoy yourselves.
Cool. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Titanium Hound, developed by Red Spot Sylphenia, published by Overgames, released March 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. Titanium Hound is a retro-looking video game in cyberpunk genre where you are going to pilot huge and agile exoskeleton to crush hordes of Kray security drones and abominations to uncover conspiracy carefully crafted by one of the global corporations. Purnell, make some sense of all of that.
Well, Titanium Hound is, I guess it's technically somewhat considered to be a running gun game, where the idea being you are this mech pilot who is engaging in a series of missions to fulfill, I guess, a bunch of objectives. You're going to get where I'm going with this in a second, I think. So the way the gameplay works, however, is that at the beginning of a level, you'll pretty much choose a stage, and the game will give you a bit of context on why you're going to the level. And then once you're comfortable with that, you will select it officially. He will beam down onto the level to engage in action. The running gun comes from the fact that you go scroll from left to right, with the goal being to fulfill general objectives, but more often than not, it's just going to be to the end of the level in some capacity. Your control scheme in this game is what makes it particularly unique, though, because that's right. You know it, baby. Unique. So you have the normal walk phase here. You have a dash mechanic as well. And the dash mechanic, if you dash through an enemy, will also allow you to kind of melee them. And then perhaps the biggest interesting change or thing that makes this game stand out is the way that actual gunplay works. Because you have, quote-unquote, infinite ammo, but that comes at a price. Your ammo is intrinsically linked to your shield gauge. Every time you fire your gun gauge goes down, but your shield gauge goes up. Decrease to gunfire, increase to shield. And when you run out of bullets, that typically means you have a maxed-out shield. The way you get gunfire back is to use your actual shield. More, less shield, more gunfire. There is also the ability to fire, choose between lethal damage gunshots and, you know, not lethal damage, incapacitating gunshots. The incapacitating's purpose is primarily to, like, stun mechanical enemies more often than not. For example, there might be security cameras on the level where if you try to actually blow it up, the security camera will summon drones to approach you and attack. So you want to shut it down using your, you know, your disabler, and then move past it before it can re-engage itself. You will be doing a lot of jumping between using this. Hell, I forgot to even mention, the jump function also takes gunfire juice. So if you jump, that's less bullets. So you got to do that back and forth over and over again. You will be progressing through the level, solving puzzles and stuff in there, because you might get to a room. The game will tell you, well, you can't progress through here because you have to activate, you know, the lock to unlock this door. And you have to figure out what to do within that room to unlock the door. It might be blow up a certain number of objects, flick a number of switches. But throughout all of that, you will be getting attacked ad nauseum by a variety of enemies who are up your butt and around the corner looking to blow your mech up. And this is what gets weird. And this is the part where I'm going to start. You're like, what the heck is Purnell's issue with this game? So that at its core sounds okay. In fact, I actually wasn't even all that disinterested in the transition of gun to shield mechanic at first, because I'm always interested in looking for something new in this genre of games. I look to see when people make a bit of a shift to make things a little bit different. The hiccup I got, though, is that depending on the scenario, it actually kind of hinders the momentum for the game. That's one of the issues I got. For example, you might be like, okay, well, I'm doing all right. I'm trying to move forward here and just progress to the level. Well, you might be sitting pretty on shields, not so much on gun, and find yourself thinking you need to rebalance the gunfire, so you have to now sit down and kind of like charge your shield up just for a little bit before you move forward, being comfortable with having some gunfire. it's not a game killer, but some every once in a while, I'm just kind of like, man, I guess I'll just run forward and take a few shots intentionally just to get gunfire back. But it goes against your normal way of thinking of saying, I don't want to take damage. You know, I don't want to take hits. And there were even times where I felt like I was actually taking damage from enemies. Oh, because, yeah, you guess you tell the time the shield uses. So I decided to pull that off. But ultimately, yeah, I wasn't too big on that sometimes. Then, probably the weirdest but biggest issue for me is the fact that I never really quite felt the impact in my gunplay. Okay, there's one more thing after this. Is the gunplay impact. So if you play a game like Contra, one of the most traditional of the running gun games, when you shot an enemy, you honestly felt like you were hitting it. I can't quite explain the why, but anyone listening to this and anybody chatting with me right now could probably make that same statement. When you played Contra and you shot bullets at an enemy, you knew you were damaging it. It felt like you were damaging it, and you got a sense of impact from your gunfire striking your target. And that's a large part of what makes running gun games feel as good as they do. In this game, however, it might have been just my loadout. I don't know. But I honestly felt like my bullets were just kind of like tinking enemies. But I never felt like I was actively engaging them. I never felt that impact of the gunfire combat. So that took something away from me on that. I was fighting certain bosses, and I got to the point where I was like, okay, well, I can just see them flashing, which I guess that's going to have to be enough in this case. So I'm just going to fire my guns up there, and when they die, they die. But I just didn't get that sense of impact from it all. And then I guess the last thing that gave me a little bit of hiatus there is that I felt like the momentum of the movement wasn't 100% what I wanted it to be. Like it felt a little floaty at times with the jumps, which, I mean, when it comes to stuff like this, I like it to be a little bit tighter. Not a game killer for some people, and it's something you could probably get used to, but for me, it's just I wanted it to be a little bit tighter on that kind of thing. But I will say, in the positive light, though, the music I enjoyed and the art style is fantastic. They did a really good job with the sprite work on both the character models and also the map areas that you're traversing through the game. And there is a mechanic also where between levels, I mentioned earlier about maybe my loadout was off. Between levels, you can equip a variety of elements to kind of enhance or improve your mech to give it things like, you know, better shields, better gunfire, more mobility, and you have a certain number of slots which to equip them. You can earn more by finding collectible objects throughout the stages you play through. The more of those you get, the more objects you're supposed to unlock. And then from there, you can just kind of build up more and more of a loadout, and it builds upwards from there. So more better, I can't believe I just said more better, but better objects or better items become available to you the more of those items you collect. So that's something worth considering. And heck, maybe in that some respect, that might be the thing that could have improved my sense of experience in this game too. But for the sake of it, though, it just wasn't clicking with me, which is unfortunate because, again, I do like when companies try to do different things with established conventions. And I do feel like the whole managing your gunplay to shield play is different and something that maybe didn't click so much for me, but that's not to say that it won't click for somebody else. So in that regard, I'm not giving this a deny it because the game is functionally sound. It has elements to it that I do feel aren't busted. It's just not personal. pendulum. So in that regard, I do feel like, where's the question?
$15. What do you think?
I think this game sits at a solid try because some people might find the things that I dislike to be fairly decent for themselves, not to mention the fact that in the event that the developers are listening to this, they might be like, hey, well, we can do some tweaks to give it that sense of crunch impact that he was talking about. That in itself could change this for me in quite a way. So it's not a deny for sure. It's more of a try.
Sounds good. Speaking of changes to games, we just got word from First Step Cinematics that Twice Reborn was just patched to fix the Chapter 8 bug that was crashing the game. Brooke mentioned that she really enjoyed the game, but it was crashing in Chapter 8. It's fixed, so her buy it stands, I would assume.
We've got to where she came back and say, actually, I'm changing that vibe.
She just jumps in right now. Hey, don't speak for me. she will be on our next episode We're gonna have another girls' night on SML with Brooke joining. Boot. Aki, you're gonna be there. Bree's gonna be there again. And Jacob, he's the biggest bitch of all. So
wait, there's a new person on the show?
No, she's just doing a review for us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Girls' night.
Sweet.
Yeah. Final words.
I have nothing. I got a homework assignment. You think I got time for final words?
Okay, Chris, do you have any final words? God damn it, you guys are terrible at this. I don't think.
Give her a chance. She might have some final words.
I don't know. She might say fuck.
Don't you are say correct.
She's definitely
just use a different cuss word. He won't feel bad.
She's definitely gonna curse.
Final word. Shit.
Well, thanks to everyone for being on, doing their thing. Aki, give us final words.
Go drink a Fappuccino.
There you go. There, those are kind words.